It's Cofield and Company on ESPN, Las Vegas.
The Yankees have Aaron Judge and Juan Soto breaking records. Ruth, Mantle, Gehrig, and the Mets have Grimace and now Hattua. Come on, bro. I can't take it. I cannot take it anymore. It's ridiculous. And then you wonder why fans get so ticked off and upset. It's embarrassing. Is it the biggest deal in the world? No, absolutely. Does it mean anything on the field? No. But that's the problem. The product on the field isn't good enough, and you're coming up with these silly gimmicks that are laughing stock. It's a joke. Hawk Tua.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. That's WFAN Sal Licata. He does a show with Brandon Tierney, who, that guy's a whack job. He was my roommate at one point, so he is crazy. Not Sal.
Was what he said not true?
No, not at all. He's 100% right. And you and I didn't talk about this. I'm really curious where you go with this one. So I love Grimace like I've never loved another man. Grimace isn't a man, but you get my point. I love Grimace back in the Mickey D days. He's one of the all-time mascots. That was kind of funny. I saw the viral Hawk to a girl. Okay. It was good for like a day. Good for her. She got an agent. She's stretching out her 15 minutes of fame. What I don't understand is why is she throwing out the first pitch at a baseball game? One of the Mets higher-ups is like, well, he actually admitted. He's like, well, the Yankees have some different things to pitch, so we really try to embrace viral moments. But is that the viral moment that you embrace? Is some woman talking about spitting on wieners? And I'm like, that's the nicest way I can say it, but like, okay, cool. But like, she shouldn't be throwing out the first pitch. Now, she did do a press conference after it, and when I saw that, it was a press conference too? It was for some sort of charity for animals. Okay. But you can also understand how the Mets fans look at it and are like, what are we? It's a microcosm of how bad an organization they are. What are we doing? Why do we have Hawk to a girl throwing out a first pitch? Come on.
I didn't like it. This is a family event. Sports is different. It's a different type of entertainment. Don't bring in a person who is not representing anything good. I'm sorry. Your one statement isn't any good reputation of what you set yourself up to be. That's not okay at all. 15 seconds of fame? Yeah, no, she's definitely leaking that.
I'll give her credit. She's making money. So, but I don't know how a major league sports organization.
I'm just tired of these content creators. Mind you, I love a good content creator, but I'm so tired of them who don't have any morals or values or don't represent the right things. And then now you are trying to equalize yourself with other things. You get invited to a huge sporting event, and children are probably questioning, who are you? And they're mentioning you as Hawk to a girl. Children know how to Google things. It's a problem. I don't like it at all.
Hey, son. Dad, can you explain who that is to me? Yeah, son.
Wait, on Google, how do you spell Hawk Tua? Yeah, that's what that becomes.
I will say, listen, I don't even know what age, like, you need to be aware of that now. I would hope if I had kids, they wouldn't know about it until, well, I'm not going to be ridiculous, but, you know. Well, I would hope that my daughters wouldn't know about it until they were, like, 48. But my sons, yeah, I don't know, 16 or 17. Times have changed. I'll give you my New York sports experience going to watch. I think they were both Mets games. I was at a Mets game at Old Shea Stadium, and there was a guy like four rows in front of us who had passed out nigh. And the fun times were people just walking up to him, and he was out and just pouring beers all over him. And I think I was probably like 13 or 14. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. All right. And then the other gross one was, should I even mention this one? I remember riding, I think it was to go see Larry Johnson at UNLV. It was for a preseason NIT game. And we were just sitting across from a guy who insisted on picking his nose the entire time on the train and eating it.
Wait, how long ago was this?
It's a long time ago. Well, I'm gonna go 38 years ago.
So the cameras weren't as active because he would be all over
be
social
viral.
Media.
I mean, well, my whole point is, like, gross things happen. But I that like Hawk to a girl is next level. And we've given her like 19 free pops here. That's enough. Okay. The WNBA is back. And my lord, it's here's the silver platter for let me say it correctly. Here's the silver platter for Steve Cofield. You know I love the first half. You know I love Angel Reese and I love Caitlin Clark. I love anything that's going on between them. And I love the fact that the old players are like, what's happening? Why are these two so popular? This sucks. It's good for them, but I'm jealous. How about Caitlin Clark coming out of the gates, refreshed and, like, kind of mean? This is another level.
I love it. And the rest of the WNBA deserves that type of Caitlin Clark. She
say it again. The rest of?
The rest of the WNBA deserves that type of Caitlin Clark, who finally got a break for about a month. Took a little vacation, got a little R&R, and now she's coming back and balling, and she's not allowing anybody to take advantage of her on the court. And I like that. You got
I got a technical for basically being mad at myself because I missed the three, and then I went and hit the backboard, and he told me it was disrespectful to the game of basketball. So, I don't know. It reminded me of the technical that I got in college where I said, where it's like a personal frustration. Had nothing to do with my team. Had nothing to do with their reffing. Had nothing to do with other team. It was just because I'm a competitor. And I felt like I should have been making more shots. So, but I think he fired me up to continue to play a lot harder. I thought we got a lot better after he did that. So, I want to thank him for that.
Okay, we're going to throw that again. Let me set it up. We'll get to it. That was Caitlin Clark getting a T. So first of all, as you said, we're now seeing her talk more trash, which she did a little bit early, and then I think she got scared away from doing it because that went viral and because people at the time were picking sides between Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, and Caitlin Clark had been portrayed as some kind of saint, some Midwest, whatever, you know, proper prim. You know what? I'll just do it. Angel Reese the thug and Caitlin Clark's a Midwest white. Okay, let's cut to the chase. Well, meanwhile, honestly, if you're good at basketball, whether you're black, white, or whatever, you probably talk trash. I don't see how you can't do it because trash talk is going on. The other thing is women talk trash. Women can be nastier than men when they play basketball. And that got me – that this goes back to the NCAA tournament. That got me extremely pissed off, and it should have pissed off women – that they were like, oh, you know, they're doing the face thing to each other. And like, yeah, women compete. They talk. They can hear. They want to fire back. There's nothing wrong with that. That's why the WNBA is going to make it pretty, you know, to a pretty decent level and get a big TV deal because it is a real sport.
Yeah. And people who didn't watch it before didn't expect that level of physicality. Like I've said before, it's competitive. That's what they do there. They're going to chirp. They're gonna chirp. We're women. That's what we do. And when it comes to their specific game and being at the level of talent that they are, and even seeing these two rookies, and it's more than just them, but since these two are the highlights and playing as well as they are against these teams, it's refreshing, I will say that.
I understand what people are doing, especially on places like TikTok. They're embracing this she versus she. I think it's stupid. It's good for us. If you want to make both of them, it's like double villain off. That's fine. But, yeah, there's a couple things happened. So she was talking trash during the game to Seattle. Then after the game, she's waving to the crowd because I'm assuming there was probably Iowa fans there and a few, whatever they're called, the Fever, right? Almost called the Pacers, waving them on. Then Skylar Diggins does this stupid quick walk and bumps her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you doing? And then that bite we played. Can we load this up again, Griffin? She got a T in the game. And the technical foul was for a bumbling player on her part, followed by she slapped. Everyone said the backboard. She didn't hit the backboard. She hit the stanchion with the pad. She went up and smacked the pad. And then some dude tees her up. She'll explain it here. This is a ridiculous technical foul.
I got a technical for basically being mad at myself because I missed the three, and then I went and hit the backboard. And he told me it was disrespectful to the game of basketball. So, I don't know. It reminded me of the technical that I got in college where I said, where it's like a personal frustration. Had nothing to do with my team. Had nothing to do with their reffing. Had nothing to do with other team. It was just because I'm a competitor. And I felt like I should have been making more shots. So, but I think he fired me up to continue to play a lot harder. I thought we got a lot better after he did that. So, I want to thank him for that.
I'm glad to hear that. I really do believe there are officials who are doing women's basketball who are like, whoa, what's going on here? Like, If a guy did that, I don't think a guy, like, come on. If Draymond Green goes and punches the freaking pad underneath the basket, they're going to tee him up?
They might. It's Draymond Green.
He's got a lot of equity where he can basically do, he has
he
to
does,
do a lot.
He does, but he's also walking on very thin rocks right now. He's on lava, if you shall say. But I don't know. It's interesting because seeing refs act like this, of course they pick sides, right? And there's so much controversy over Caitlin Clark. So it's things like that. She can make small, I don't even want to say mistakes. She can do small things like that and it will be blown out of proportion because it's Caitlin Clark and the storylines that come behind her.
I'm ready, though, if this is what the second half is going to be like. And we didn't even mention Caitlin Clark, her play. She's gotten over 10 assists multiple times now. Fever have come out of the gates 2-0 in the second half. They're going to be a player. They're probably going to make the playoffs. I hope the Chicago Sky, I almost said Sun, Chicago Sky make the playoffs. So we see Angel and Caitlin in the playoffs. They won't play each other. It'll be low seeds. But all of it's good for the WNBA. What did Angel Reese just had 19 points and 20 rebounds in a game. So
that break was the best thing that it could have done for anyone who did not. And, you know, credit to all the women that did go to the Olympics, right? Like, yep. We just talked about the Aces. They folded against Liberty, came back and won against the Sparks. But even just between those two teams, Liberty and Aces, 10 players between the two teams got back from the Olympics.
Yep.
That's a lot of players. Now you have other players like Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. They've all got time to rest. Their muscles are relaxed and rested. This second half of the WNBA, like, I'm going to be tuning into as many games as I possibly can. Would I have said that 2 years ago? Probably not.
That's better than it's ever been. The level of play is better. The balance around the league is better. It was cool watching the Aces steamroll the league back-to-back years to get titles, but you knew things were going to change. Players get spread around. Aces get a little bit older, right? So I know this is just the way Sports Talk Radio is on some shows, and I try not to lecture too often, but I do have to give a little lecture here real quick. We're going to get to the Raiders starting quarterback gig here in a second, but I noticed a couple of college football situations, Nye, that I think are interesting. One, Boise State named their starter. Boise State is the best program in the Mountain West Conference. UNLV wants to be there. They played them last year in the championship game. They played okay at times, but at other times they didn't. And in the offseason, UNLV chose to go the route of, no one said this to me, but to run their offense, they got some guys who are a little more mobile. They got some older guys, right? They usually transfer portal. They'll bring in guys who are 1 and 2 year guys. That's all they're going to have with the program. Or they might get a rare guy who has 3 or 4 years left. They layer it that way. But a quarterback, they already had Cam Friel, who's a senior. They brought in Haj Malik Williams, who is a senior. They brought in Matt Saluka, who is a senior. You get the theme here. And then they did bring in a true freshman in Gael Ochoa from El Paso. So they've got two guys who are battling it out. And one was at Campbell. One was at Holy Cross. There's no, hey, this guy was a five-star recruit. You know, there was no hype coming in. Some, but not like Boise. Boise brought in a guy who went to USC, Malachi Nelson, who was rated a top six quarterback in his class. He's a second-year freshman. He surprised a lot of people because people assumed, hey, he went to USC. He was recruited by Oklahoma, UCLA, you know, SEC schools. He's going to go somewhere like that. He goes to Boise, and I think a lot of people took that like, oh, it's the Little Leagues with Boise. It's group of five. He's going to go there and start it right away. Well, he's not starting. And the reaction on the internet is just absurd. It's just, hey, he went to USC, so of course, he's going to be an automatic starter at Boise, but that's not the way it works. So they're starting a guy who played last year, who's experienced, who knows the offense, who is a veteran.
Which only makes sense. You know the line.
Yep.
You know the receivers.
You know the system. You know the offense.
But you know what? People, a school is a form of a qualification, right? And because you've went to a big name school and you might have performed, they expect you to kind of get everything handed to you at that point in time.
Well, the funny thing is at USC, he didn't perform. He didn't get a chance to play. I'm not saying that should have told you there was something going on, but recruiting rankings are stupid. Recruiting reputations are stupid. There was a guy who came here a couple of years ago, Harrison Bailey, who went to Tennessee out of high school. He comes here, and the entire camp, like, I can't sit there and go, he's not starting. or I can't. It's like you got to be somewhat gentle in the way you present it. But I watched him in practice, and I'm like, he's not starting. I don't care that he went to Tennessee as a five-star. So he comes here. He loses out the job. He barely got playing time. He wound up leaving for Louisville. Some guys who are rated four and five stars just aren't what they've been touted to be. So it's just – it's been crazy on the internet where people are like, they're going to start this quarterback for Boise. It was the 110th ranked quarterback recruit. Well, this guy was a number six recruit. Yeah, they're like 3 years apart in age. They have a vast difference in terms of resume and experience. So,
do you see him having the potential to play? Like, do you see it kind of like a mixed type of thing?
Possibly. They did it last year. So they had a guy last year who was 6'6 and more of the running quarterback, although he diced up UNLV pretty good throwing the ball. Well, he transferred to Arkansas. But last year at times they had a two-quarterback system. The kid, and I mean, I was reading last night that people were looking at his social media and he started deleting stuff, which, come on, stop. Stop. It's a long season. I'll almost guarantee you, because I think it's happened like 18 years in a row, UNLV will have to play multiple quarterbacks. And it's not even generally poor play. Guys get injured. So this kid's going to get a chance to play. So it's like just everyone pump the freaking brakes. Which brings us to the Raiders. Like, I want to come in here as a local sports talk dude in Las Vegas and freaking melt down and scream and yell about, you know, Akon and Minshew. Like, they're both going to play this year. Unless they get what they were hoping to get out of Minshew, which is a veteran quarterback who can latch onto the job and keep it. But guess what, Nye? What has he shown so far in the preseason? He hasn't shown it. They're both going to play.
Very mediocre on both ends.
I don't think they're both going to play in game one. No. If they both play in game one, that's a really bad sign.
That would be crazy. Talk about everything else having to hold them down. You better hope that line is as good as it needs to be, and you better hope the defense holds the offense down. That's literally what we're coming into this as, because what we've seen so far, there's hope, because I want to believe that there's hope, but I'm nervous. I'm definitely nervous.
Meanwhile, in Miami, they have a starting quarterback. He just got a big deal. I'll say Tua Tagovailoa over the years has grown on a lot of people. There's still some doubters out there, but my God, his numbers have been excellent. He's gotten himself in better shape. Probably throws a better deep ball than he did a couple of years ago. He's vibing with Tyreek Hill. Jalen Waddle's turned into a good weapon. They have good running backs. They got to get better in cold weather situations. Like, they're going to have to, you know, you got to get out of the warm weather and you're going to have to play cold weather games in the playoffs. So it's working pretty well right now for Tua, but he went on Levitard and he wanted to go back in the Wayback Machine. This is a really broad topic. I like you found this and I found this. It was really good. Let's fire Levitard with Tua as Tua talks about going from his previous coach to the now cerebral and kind of fun, happy guy, Mike McDaniel.
To put it in simplest terms, if you woke up every morning and I told you you suck at what you did, that you don't belong doing what you do, that you shouldn't be here, that this guy should be here, that you haven't earned this right, and then you have somebody else come in and tell you, dude, you are the best fit for this. Like, you are accurate, you are the best whatever, you are this, you are that. Like, how would it make you feel listening to one or the other?
So that's a real-life situation for a lot of people. So that was Tua going back to the previous regime, and Mike McDaniel's just not like that. And I knew there was going to be something with Mike McDaniel because he's so much different than the old school fire and brimstone, scream at you, break you down almost every day. And here's the thing. When you're a manager, whether it's in our biz, people who are listening right now, driving around, every employee is a little bit different in terms of motivation. You can't use the same style. But there are football coaches who are just incapable of having different styles for different people. They only know one style. And Brian Flores, I believe this because you read enough about Brian Flores. He is a hard ass, which I'm not against. But for Tua, he's telling you, breaking him down every day didn't work.
Sounds like a Bill Belichick. Sounds like a rewind of that. But you're right. No, being a head football coach,
yeah,
you got to be a leader. And you have to know how to speak life into your men, because other way it's not going to work. And in his case with Tua, you look at his family background, you look at the dynamic of where he grew up. It's all about family. It's all about care. It's all about trust. And maybe it just wasn't that with Brian Flores, which honestly disappoints me because I've always really liked him because he is so hard. But then you see the new coach come in and you see the way that he's just a player's coach for one, and he fits in with the guys and he speaks life into everybody. But he also makes things like a joke a lot of the times too, and I think players are able to relate to him. So yeah, that it caught me off guard because Tua was extremely honest. Actually, did you expect him to be that honest?
He has nothing to lose now. He has a deal. He got his deal, right? I mean, if he had said this before he'd gotten his deal, then you'd have some old school football people basically calling him a puss and he can't be coached. And he's got his deal, so he can say what he wants. He's the CEO of the franchise. Now, in defense of Flores, as you mentioned, sounds like Belichick. He's a Belichick guy. He's an older coach. The other thing is, when you draft a quarterback and you've got a defensive head coach, I think defensive coaches are more likely to be screamers, yellers, break you down, break you apart than offensive coaches. So that mix from the get-go was going to be a little bit weird. But reality is, when you bring someone in at quarterback and you take them top six, at some point you probably need to hire a coach who gets along with that person really well. That's the most important position on the team, which is why I don't understand why most organizations now with young quarterbacks, as they're trying to develop them, hire defensive head coaches.
That's exactly the thing that I was going to question. But it sucks because a lot of coaches are defensive coaches, and when you learn that throughout your whole life and that's what you're shaped as, it's not easy just to turn the page and be an offensive coach mind, right? It's not easy to have that.
Well, we did see in Hard Knocks last week, was it last week or the week before, Matt Eberflus, who is a defensive guy, I don't think has the same personality as Flores, but comes from a defensive background, played linebacker. He's a tough guy. We did see him talking to Nick Saban about really dealing with the quarterback personally. That surprised me that a defensive coach would stand right there and be coaching a quarterback. But here's the thing. I just referenced Nick Saban. Mm-hmm. If there's anything we know about Nick Saban over the years,
he's as hard as it gets.
But over time, he actually morphed. He was still a hard ass, but I think he got a better understanding. And that's why there was no generational thing with Saban. Like, when times changed, he changed. Mm-hmm. He didn't lose all his core values, but he got a little softer, a little better at listening.
But he always knew how to talk to his players.
Yes.
And you have to know how to communicate because everybody has different communication styles, right? With Matt Eberflus, it's different because you see him handling Caleb Williams much differently than you saw that he handled Justin Fields. It's because he wants to put in that effort with Caleb Williams in developing him. I don't think it was the same with Justin Fields.
Yeah.
It's a completely different scenario, but you also kind of have to look at the past and bring it to the future as well. He is putting in all of his eggs to Caleb Williams, their number one draft pick, and that's why we see him acting like this. I'm not going to believe everything I see on Hard Knocks. That's what I won't do.
Well, I think any head coach at any level who, even if they're from a defensive background, they're like, hey, you know what? Offense is the offense. We'll let the OC deal with the quarterback most of the time. Like, what are you doing? You got to be involved. But here's the thing, and I'll go on a little smashy route here with, I'll point to men, and there are women like this too. There are men who are incapable of changing and learning how to be a better communicator. And sorry guys, I'm violating the team rules by talking out against you or speaking out against you guys. But you do have to realize at some point as a manager, as a coach, that not everyone reacts the same way to the same approach, right? Screaming and yelling at whoever, you can just see it with them. They're like, okay, I hate this. I've been on the end of getting screamed and yelled at. I had a writing job, and the guy was like 20 years younger than me. He'd just be like, this sucks, it's terrible. And like, he had no patience. I'm like, well, you kind of teach me, not be a D-bag about it. But
yeah.
But on the flip side, like, I've been a D-bag before. So I can't, like, okay, maybe I probably do some of that stuff. I will tell you, I love these football preseason shows so much. And anyone who listens to the show, I go crazy for these 6 weeks. And I like going to practices and watching people. I'm trying to study how to work with people all the time. And this is not a, Cofield, you know, he's evolving.
Cofield's trying to study? Trying to study something new?
I actually do all the time. But I really do. I listen to a lot of, like in the case of the UNLV coaches, I listen to a lot of what they say and how they motivate and try to pick up little things. Good and bad. Sometimes it's bad.
I feel like
never with this staff, though. These guys are great. But maybe some past staffs I looked and I'm like...
With the way that the world is right now, I'm always calling the world sensitive because it's actually true. But the way that people are moving around right now, you have to have good communication or there's just no way of truly being that pinnacle of what success is. The most successful people typically, I want to say, are good at communicating, just like the most successful football teams, organizations. You see the cultures in everybody's organization. Mike Tomlin, what does he represent and set in Pittsburgh? What does Andy Reid represent and set? Because they all, those two specifically, have good communication styles.
You don't last that long, right? Reid at two stops and Tomlin at a stop. We're going to break here in a second. Good feedback up on the, I think it's our Facebook line, because we're doing live right now on ESPN Las Vegas Facebook and at Steve Cofield on Twitter. Alan chimed in to go back to the Raiders quarterback situation. We do have to mention, we haven't mentioned it in three different conversations, there was no Davante Adams on Saturday.
True.
And there was no Brock Bowers. They're arguably the two best weapons. Now, they were going against the number two defense for the Cowboys. Alan said, I think they're hiding the Raiders. A lot of stuff with the two stud tight ends in all the ways they'll use them. So they don't want to show people all the different looks they're going to give with Bowers and
I like that take.
Michael Mayer.
I like that a lot.
He said Raiders will look much better during the regular season.
Yep. I agree.
There's a chance.
I like you because you did not come to a quick assumption like the most of Raider Nation. Trust me, I'm a diehard Raider Nation, but everybody started getting nervous and scared. It's not it.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Marquee Day Club, 5 o'clock hour, Cofield and Company. Cindy's back. Nye's here. Nye Zaragoza, part of the company. Steve Sear as well. Mateo with the setup today. We have actually some good sports talk. I got to run a couple things by Steve and Cindy. Our new brand for Steve and Cindy is what?
Sin Sear Entertainment Hour. C-I-N for Cindy and C-Y-R. The Sin Sear, I'm trying to be sincere right now.
All right.
The Sin Sear Entertainment Hour. Do you like it or not? Be honest.
Yeah, it looks good. I like the logo. I think it's a good
name.
Oh, come on. Nye froze up. I don't think Nye knows.
Like I'm high.
I don't think Nye knows what the hell you were talking about. That was pretty fast. I'll just show you the logo. What is the Entertainment Hour?
Well, look, I think that
is
we
it
bring
here or are you guys doing a podcast?
No. I think we just bring something different to your show because normally, especially during the summer, because, you know, football hasn't really started yet. Baseball's in the middle, and so I try to take you to new venues and that, and we bring more entertainment value. Like, I don't want to have just athletes on. I want to have people in the industry on, and that's what Cindy really brings to us because she's Bottle Girl Diaries, you know. So we're trying to just expand your horizons because you don't get out very much except for, like, sports crap.
I know.
Okay, so that's
God you're here.
That's the sincere hour. That's what I'm talking about.
It's important, especially being in Vegas. You know, you have a different perspective of people who have – worked in it from different, you know, aspects and positions. So I think that's what he was trying to do, is just like diving into the lives of, you know, the industry, especially like, you know, being.
She's covering my ass right now, but yes, she's exactly.
No, I totally understand what he's saying because we've done shows for so long. Mm-hmm. There are so many topics. You usually get pretty wound up because people come on and talk about stuff you don't know about. It's not a shot. Like, we learn a lot from different people around town. Frankly, he and I have talked about it. We need to do this all the time because. I think Vegas, from a sports and then kind of like underground sports scene, is really undercovered and underexposed.
And remember, are we going to get a pro baseball team? I'm behind on that. I know we're having an implosion party to watch the Tropicana be imploded.
They're definitely taking down the Trop. You can see that.
Okay, but are the A's coming?
The next deadline is December 5th, and then they've got a backup deadline of December 12th, and they got to come up with financing. It's very complicated. I mean, I would say.
We're hoping.
70%? 70%,
yes. But my point is we're in the right town at the right time to be doing what we're doing.
You are.
And what I hope the Sin Sear Hour does is, I would love to do it at least like once a month, come on and show you guys a world you don't know, like where we are today, Marquee Day Club. Because you would have never got here without the Sin Sear Hour.
I would have never known about the professionalism of Bikini Tug of War and that you're officially licensed how much is it every year?
$18 a year. I'm a member of the American Association of Tug of War, which was an Olympic sport.
He's a real ref. Like, we could not do this event. Like, if I was out there trying to do the event, they'd be like, get the hell out of here.
The girls have to sign waivers, and they can't wrap the rope around. There's a lot of rules on that.
They trust him. He is force.
And so the one of the like district managers is going to come this year to it, just because, you know, it's such a
big. Oh, is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Where have they been? We're holding the preeminent tug of war event.
We've been doing this for 12 years, and now they're finally checking up on me. But yeah,
how about the picture I took in San Francisco? They had a little poster in San Francisco at a bar at some bikini. Wasn't bikini, sorry. It was a regular tug of war. It was from like 1906, mm-hmm. and it really was a licensed event. And then, yeah, the dudes all had handlebar mustaches.
It was an Olympic sport, tug of war.
It was 1900. Yeah, 1900.
So I just love doing bikini tug of war, and I've already got 7 teams lined up for September 17th at the Plaza, and I want to get to at least 12 or 14, and then it'll be a great day again. And the girls really get into it, I'm telling you.
So let me ask you, if Nye came out and she's like, I want to do it, but I got to wear sweatpants. What do you do as the official?
I rule it is not sweatpant tug of war. It's bikini tug of war.
I got too much junk in the trunk for anything else.
You don't have to wear a thong, but it's got to be. We prefer not a one piece. I've had girls who can wear one piece.
Why not?
It's just, well, because we don't call it one piece tug of war.
You can wear the
one pieces are sexy.
You can wear the trunks.
Okay,
you can definitely have a very sexy.
I wear one pieces all the time. Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely can.
Okay.
You can wear one piece.
It's just a one-piece monokini. I wear them all the time. Yeah. You know, just I think they're appropriate.
He's stuck in the old days, remember?
Okay. Oh, yeah, he's old.
Look. So,
I mean, he's a licensed official. Let's not have a fight here.
It's teams of three.
You say goes.
And I upped it. It's teams of three. You have to be under 400 pounds. So that's 133 average. You have a girl 150, then you need a girl 110.
Oh, okay.
One year the Sin City Roller Girls showed up with like 3 girls.
They were
huge.
The towers of power.
And I was like, that's not fair. So we have an official win. 3 girls under 400 pounds. And that's fair.
Is your gym back in it?
Yeah. My gym had a team last year, Fight Capital. Remember? Yeah. So
Can you repeat when this is and when the last day is to sign up?
September 17th, and you could sign up September 16th. Just come to the Plaza. And the weigh-in is usually about 1 o'clock. Jonathan Jostle gives us the whole pool area. It's got a wet deck, so when you fall, they fall in the water. It's really cool. And last year it was packed, and we had 12 teams. It's a round robin. It's double elimination, and I'll start at about 3 o'clock when he goes live. So that's why I'm not on the air as much. And the girls really get into it. And then we have the finals, and Cofield will commentate. Cindy, you'll be live bikini tug of war. And then the president and owner from the Plaza, we have a big trophy that is really cool, and each girl gets a medal. So it's the Sear Olympics.
It's a special event.
It is.
I usually cry at the end. I get emotional.
Why?
I get emotional.
That was good.
It's just heartwarming. It's the height of competition. It used to be an Olympic sport.
Right.
Truth be told, on the signups, we want to have people reach out to Steve. If you want to have a 3-woman team with an alternate, they got to get in a little bit earlier than the day of.
Exactly. So stevecyr.com. You can go register right there or send me a message. The trophy they custom make for me every year is.
That's serious business.
Yeah. Right now, that is in Peppermint Hippo.
Is this a trophy for each girl that wins?
Each girl that wins gets a medal.
Okay.
And their sponsor, Buffalo Wild Wings or Sapphire, gets the big trophy.
Okay.
And
from what I heard at the Hippo, they have the trophy in the back right outside the dressing room. And as the women go out to work, they rub it. Like Notre Dame,
like
when
Notre
you hit
Dame,
the sign, play like champions. It's the Bikini Tug of War trophy.
But it is a cool trophy, right?
That's pretty
cool. Yeah. So our sponsors that, and the girls get medals and everything, so it's cool.
And this happens once a year?
Once a year. This will be our 11th or 12th.
I'm excited for it. I'm here for it. I'm gonna maybe help recruit some girlies to come compete. I think that'd be cool.
Tal should have a team. Hakkasan's had a team before.
I'm going to talk to the Zook girlies.
I'll tell you, the Buffalo Wild Wings girls take it very seriously.
They're the best. I still have a picture of them.
Who's your champions?
Well, returning would be Peppermint Hippo.
Hippo, yep.
We're going to have to change that.
Yeah. But if Buffalo Wild Wings comes back.
Oh, yeah, Buffalo Wild Wings
is strong. They have such a feeder program here. There's just hundreds and hundreds of ladies.
Right. They have little tryouts, and then
now I think you're joking.
No, one year we had. Remember the perfume guy last year had 2 teams. I let him have 2 teams. Remember Nolan guy. Yeah.
You know what's funny about Buffalo Wild Wings is most girls that are bottle service girls in the industry all worked at Buffalo Wild Wings.
No way.
Yes, or not Buffalo Wild Wings. Hooters.
Hooters.
She knows. Yeah.
So Hooters.
Hooters. Why did I think Buffalo Wild Wings? Yeah. The same thing,
it's
right?
Close.
Wings.
Or Twin
Wings.
Peaks.
Wings. Twin Peaks. That is, yeah, Twin Hooters Peaks. And Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Anyway, no.
So September 17th, Plaza. We'll be out there for the live show, 3 to 6. Like, Steve will get it organized with the teams of the way in the day before. And then it's pretty raucous. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
I think I'm actually, I'm gonna overstaff that day, and I may not be on much.
Really?
I want to be out there.
No, no.
I kind of get caught doing the show, which I love the show.
Yeah, I'm not on much either. Yeah,
you're not,
and that's
I know.
Why I want Cindy, because then she can be on it. Because I literally it may be on one segment.
Do I actually just, even like get in the pool? You know, and
you can.
Okay,
we,
cool.
We can get
it. Let's do it.
They're actually like right there, and we're in a cabana right here.
Oh,
it's
perfect.
Like a wet
I mean, it gets pretty rough.
That's awesome. I'm excited
this
for it.
This is serious, right? You know it is.
What else can we look forward to?
Man, that's really, you know, if in my busy schedule, I work for 9 casinos. If I can do 2 or 3 shows with Cofield every summer, that's about it. Until I retire, which will be in a couple years, then I'll probably do a bunch of shows with him. But that's about all.
You have a lot more going on.
Well, oh,
we've been hanging out. We've been hanging out for UFC over at your joint. You should mention that.
No, yeah, over at the front yard, we show all the UFC. I'm working on Whale Hunt 4 right now. We have a TV deal with Showtime to do a series, Whale Hunt the Desert. So we've been working on that for over a decade. And then I work for the Viejas in California, so I have to go there a lot. So I'm all over. But, you know, my daughter's, you met her, 27 now, so I got a lot
videographer
of
videographer to the stars.
Yeah,
she videos and photographs all the events that we do.
She'll be at Allegiant tomorrow.
Are
you going to the practice? Which
are,
is
are
really
you
cool for our listeners. You know, the Raiders, you can go and it's cheap. You can watch them practice, but they have all their Hall of Famers, their Allegiant's open, and you can go watch. It's pretty cool. So I have customers. These guys will be in the skybox tomorrow night.
So can I roll some sports stories by you guys?
Yeah.
Not this is not hardcore, and it's not – well, I guess it is a sports story. Naya, I'm dying to do the peeing on the plane guy.
Oh,
let's do it.
Wait.
Okay, wait. Cindy and I are totally lost.
A guy got arrested, a former NFL player.
Mm-hmm.
He was blank-faced drunk on a plane. He wound up punching one guy and then somehow peeing on an old guy, and then he passed out.
And then came out with an apology.
You know what? I think I vaguely heard about this, but I cannot remember what specific athlete it was, obviously. But, yeah, what's the
craziest – easy segue. What's the craziest thing a drunk person has done?
When you've been doing in a nightclub, there's
when
had
you've been
to
doing
somebody
the bottle service.
Peed. Right,
oh,
come
man.
On.
Oh,
that's
I definitely
question.
I have a picture of – I think it was over
question.
At – at Aria, I know I caught one New Year's Eve picture of a guy just leaning over a slot machine, just taking a leak, which, like, we don't want that here in Vegas. Don't be animals.
Right.
But, hey, you get liquor in you and you're at a club.
I think that when people come to Vegas, they don't realize that, like, especially in the heat, that it's hot and then they're drinking balls to the wall and they're drinking everything and mixing. I think I've seen a girl actually sit at a table and she literally just was peeing and I don't think she realized she was peeing. And I was like, where's your friends? You know,
and
but
she was playing.
But I go, hey, no, she was just sitting down.
Oh, my God.
And I
lost
just,
control.
And I was like, I told my busser, I'm like, I can't go back over there. It smells. And she didn't even realize it because I'm like, at that point, you're that drunk or intoxicated that you're numb.
I had
you
know? A guy,
you've had some crazy gambling stories. Where was it? Was it a guy wouldn't leave the table?
No. So I had a guy betting. I mean, there's a story in the book. He was betting $50,000 a hand. And the restroom in the high limit area was literally 10 feet to the right. He got up and peed in the corner. And so I remember the floor was like, what do you want me to do? And I go, call housekeeping and shuffle up and deal. I mean, he's betting $50,000 a hand.
Let's go.
Play on. And then I did have a guy do kind of projectile vomiting once at a dice game. And he covered all the checks or chips. And so we had to, like, watch surveillance and, you know, because you had a $10,000 bet out and he vomited on. I still got to pay it because he rolled the number. The point was eight. I remember it like it was yesterday. The point was eight. He rolled an eight and then just threw up all over the table. So we had to pay
good
and
times.
Put him to bed. Good times.
Fun story.
Fun story.
Real fun story.
Handle your liquor, everyone. That's just,
yeah.
Booze
no
one
courage.
Ever understands.
That's
it.
Why we give you complimentary drinks. I mean, I love it when people say, I'm drinking for free. I'm like, dude, you had an $80 Budweiser. You had a $200 glass of wine. I mean, you know, it's all smoke and mirrors. You know, well, Steve comped my room where the room was on Expedia for $89, but you blew $3,000, so I comped your room. I mean, my whole career is smoke and mirrors. Steve got me fight tickets. Yeah, they were $500, and you lost $15,000. So that's, you know.
What's the last big fight that you can remember where people were very fired up? I'm not saying this fight is going to be that fight, and it's actually not here. But you know Mike Tyson, this is where boxing is now. It's not where all of boxing is. Mike Tyson's going to fight Jake Paul.
And we are showing it at the Front Yard, and I have big players that want to come watch it. And whether you like Jake Paul or not, he's a draw, and I like it because I'm event-driven. I need events for people to come because you can gamble in 48 states. The only place I can't work is Utah and Hawaii. So I'm happy for Jake Paul. He's not fighting the best of them. Mike Tyson was a legend, so it's a novelty, Steve, and it's something you can bet on.
So when do they plan on doing this?
What date?
Yeah.
That fight is on, yeah, I'm losing track of it. I think November 16th.
I want to say November 15th or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, this is the old date. Oh, it's a Friday fight. Okay, so it's Friday, November 15th. So we're looking things
up. And I'm going to be packed, and I'm going to have players at Venetian, Resorts World, and Ellis. I have like 60 guys coming to watch that fight.
You can give out some names. You ever have a boxer who was a big player that you hosted or an athlete that you...
Well, Michael Jordan. I mean, that's not a secret. And not because he was Michael Jordan, but, you know, he bet $200,000-$300,000 in an hour.
Wow.
What was the hook on you to get him?
I played him one-on-one. It's kind of a long story, but, yeah, I played him one-on-one, and I said, if I score on you, you have to come to the Hilton.
Wow.
Yeah, and he beat me 10-4, but I scored twice on him. I have it on video. I showed
it
to people.
What'd you hit, a couple of bombs?
That's awesome.
No, I hit one long three. And, you know, my dad's in the Kansas Basketball Hall of Fame. I grew up in a basketball family, pretty athletic. And he didn't think. First one, boom.
Look at this guy.
And then he slammed on me and said, sit your white ass down. Yeah. I have that on video. Yeah,
well, I raised an eyebrow when Steve was like, I'm pretty athletic. Steve has boxed. Do you have another fight, or are you done?
I was supposed to fight next month at Resorts World. I'm what's called a filler fight. I'm the oldest Nevada amateur to ever be licensed.
That's
first over
awesome.
50 to ever win.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm
well,
not,
how old were you in the last fight?
59. So
wow.
Pretty good.
I want to be the first six-year-old to ever fight. I broke the record at 44. And so I'm a fight capital fighter where Cindy goes too. This girl can Muay Thai and kick.
Is that right?
So, like, I know a little something. My dad actually... taught Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Muay Thai to the Ogden City Police Department out in Utah. So, yeah, he taught me some things.
I was on the speed bag one day, and all of a sudden I felt a tap on the shoulder, and it was this girl. I'm like, what are you doing here? So, yeah, so I'll probably fight November, December. But, yeah, it's, you know, I'm addicted to it. That's every day. So I'm 190 right now. At 170, I'm the bigger, longer man.
Let us know.
The fights
we're in
are
there.
Easier. Yeah.
We're
so
in there.
You sit in the back, and if the early fights go quick, they need a filler. I'm going to fight, but usually it's when after the people left. So, yeah. And I fought on Fremont Street. I fought here
at the
Cosmopolitan.
Yep.
Did I win or lose? I think I lost on Fremont.
It's a close fight.
I lost.
All right, we'll take a break here. We'll come back, wrap it up. Steve's here, Cindy, Nye. Mateo with a great job with the setup. It's been flawless today. Griffin back on the board. Excellent job. Marquee Day Club on a Monday.
Cofield & Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Last couple minutes here at Marquee Day Club. Steve's here, Cindy, Nye Zaragoza. Let me do a giveaway here. UNLV with the opening game next week. 2 weeks from now, home opener. Home opener. Utah Tech. Two tickets. Caller 7. 364-1100, 364-1100. I highly advise getting season tickets. They start as low as $150. You get six games. You get the same seat for every game. They've got a very aggressive schedule this year. And then you can get the club seating area, which is $350. That's where that starts. But think about it. You're getting six games for under $60 a piece, and you get to go to Allegiant Stadium. I know the get-in the other day for the Cowboy game was probably $250 for nosebleed, so you get to see Allegiant Stadium and a pretty good football team and one that's on the rise in UNLV. So, Cindy, on Bottle Girl Diaries, we were talking to some of the servers here, right?
Yeah.
And they were saying, oh,
they knew about you. Yeah, they go, aww, we know her.
Love that.
Yeah.
Makes me feel like I'm doing something right.
Well, we got like 45 seconds left, but like they were explaining, I don't know why I keep saying like, they were explaining that you train people, and I didn't realize with the servers, like there is a lot of training.
Yep.
Not only into the how you're serving and
right.
dealing with customers, but also how you look.
Yep.
Remember, 2,000 girls want 40
want
jobs.
The same job. Yeah.
Right? I mean,
so we start prepping for it in like October. You do have to be bikini ready because it is a model contract. It is a model position, and then they have the mass auditions in January to prep you for the upcoming nightclub and beach club season. And it's I call it like American Idol on steroids, yeah. But for bottle girls, you know, minus like the singing and stuff. And it's crazy. You get all this work done, you know, your hair, your makeup, your tan, $300 bikini maybe. And they interview you for like 5 minutes and with the most straight face. And you don't know if you get hired until you get that call. It's actually the worst feeling in the world, but very rewarding once you get it. So,
these girls are making, you know, six figures in 7 months.
Strong clothes. Okay. Who do we not pop? As important as anyone, your supplements and wager wire.
Oh, man.
You got 10 seconds, buddy.
Green Lumber. Okay, they are not just our sponsor, but I reached out to them because